Meeting is now being recorded.
So thank you for joining the Latin Generation panel call with the integration panel on 5th of February 2019. We have, on the call, Dennis, Asmus, Bill, Hazem, Jean, Paul, Mark Blanchet, Mastiff Duckberg, Michelle Suniard, Mariana, Mikal Momin is also there. He's not in the chat room, sure. But they're physically in the meeting room. And Pitanan and Sarma. Did I miss anybody?
Yeah, I'm Michael. I'm also there. I just cannot start Adobe Connect at the moment. It's not logging in, but I'm physically here.
Hello, Nicholas Osler, just signing in here from the IP.
Hello, Nicholas.
Hello, Sarma.
Thank you. So I think we're done with the roll call. So back to you, Dennis. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarma, Dennis, for the record. So, Nicholas, just for your benefit, we are on Adobe Connect, and we're displaying the document that was provided by IP some days ago.
I've got a copy of my machine here anyway. I was having some difficulty getting into the actual room, possibly because I didn't have the right password or whatever, but as you can see, I've got an audio connection. I do have that document, so I don't think it'll be a problem.
All right, excellent. So start from number one, comments on the repertoire. Bullet number one is requesting to add French as a reference for some of the characters. That's noted. We'll take care of that. So on number two, you are noting some of the additions of code point sequences, and you stress the need for variant relationship due to the underlining issue that was brought up some months ago. And yet, so the reason that you not see any variant relationship or rationale against or for it is because it's still in progress. We actually have gone through that analysis yesterday, and I think we have some questions about it regarding how far we want to go into this analysis. And just to put in the context, and Nicholas, I know you are not looking at Adobe Connect, but what I would like to do is to show the spreadsheet that we have prepared for this.
Okay. Just ask a question. Am I the only IP person here at the moment?
No, I believe it's we have Asmus, Mark, Michelle.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right.
Yes. When I find... I'm going to be switching my screen to... Okay, so... Attention, no, stop, share. There you go, okay. So how does that look through the Adobe Connect? Is that big enough?
Maybe slightly bigger will help. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see if I'm already 200%. All right. I think that's, So what we did here is to shortlist all the code points. We did two things. We discussed this underlying and say, okay, so the premise is that the underlining happening in certain applications like the HTML and, the linkification of domain names cannot obscure the diacritics below. We went a little bit far into doing this analysis and extended and scoped in those characters that have a extend beyond the baseline, and those features of the glyphs are obscured as well with the linkification. So there's a little bit of expansion here as to the analysis itself. So we shortlisted all those characters that have a feature beyond the baseline and diacritics below. And as you can see on the screen, we have two set of columns with three different font types and try to recreate the user experience, but not using a label, whole label, but just using the character with the underline, with the link there, and assigning a score. And this score is a 5-point scale on which one means a complete overlap of the underlying and the diacritic or whatever feature is there. A 2 is a partial overlap. And then 3 onwards, basically, it's there's some distinguishable feature that may not yield a variant relationship. So I think there are very straightforward cases where, for example, the Macron below, there is a partial overlap, and in other computers, there's a complete overlap of that, the underlying and the Macron below, which make those two visible, confusable, right? Having the underlying feature. But there are cases here which we do not feel very, for example, those diacritics that run across the baseline, and we, for example, there are 3 here. The Latin small letter E with ogonek, trying to compare with a letter E. We see that the diacritic below is partially obscured by the underline, but it does not so in a way that makes them indistinguishable. So we are leaning towards not including as variants based on underlying feature. The same case as the Latin small letter N. In other cases, such as the Latin small letter S below in line 26, even though there is some overlap with the underline, there is no target to compare to, and that's why we say not applicable. There is no target there. Moving below, you see example on line 29, which is Latin a small letter G. In certain fonts, that letter G, for example, in the Courier New, when you is exposed to a link and to an underline, that G, the feature of the G, is obscure and looks like a Q. But because this would create a relationship between two ASCII characters, that simply takes them out of scope, and that's a 5. So basically, 5 means it will come across in our proposal. We did review these items, but they are ASCII, and ASCII versus ASCII is out of scope of variants. And I want to pause here if I want to hear any reactions thus far.
This is Sarma. I'd like to make a quick comment.
Please, Sarma.
So even though, just looking at Q and G, even though they are not variants for the reason you suggested, if you all think it is still a reasonably confusable pair, maybe they could be identified as potential cases for similarity for the subsequent work downstream, even if they're not considered as variants. Just a suggestion for you all to consider.
Thank you, Sarma. Yeah, that's possible. I have Bill here wants to.
Yes, one of the things that I've proposed is that while identifying confusables for the similarity panel isn't part of our mandate, since we've found and identified a large number of them, I'm thinking we should include an appendix that documents those. If the similarity panel finds some use for it, fine. If not, they can ignore it, but at least there will be some record of what we found. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll just move on to the more a more controversial example. Okay. So here's on line number, on row number 40, we have a case with against the. Atmos. Yes, Atmos. I don't think we can hear you.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
But I think you're breaking up.
Just starting up, I appreciate the thoroughness of the analysis. I mean, the approach is nicely systematic and we're looking forward to seeing that carried out in detail. I'm surprised by how
Atmos?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but you are coming across very choppy, and we can hear, I think, one word out of four.
Yeah, that's the reverse, too. I've heard about one word of four from you.
Oh.
So, Esmus, well, is it possible for you to dial in through your phone, or because maybe the network is not coming through properly?
I hear you perfectly.
Okay.
So I was
quite point. Well now as well. Please go ahead.
Almost, go
anyway,
ahead.
Let's continue.
Better now.
Yeah, let's continue. Anyway, any other ones you want to show us?
Yeah, so we have more, again, controversial examples and curious as to how would you react on those cases where the diacrity is not parallel to underlining but across. Let's see which one. For example, line 85 on screen, letter torn against B. That would be the only candidate that would be. And some of GP members thought that a variant relationship should be warranted, but others were not quite sold on that one because of the extended leg, if you will, of the Levin torn. So
yeah, certainly.
Go ahead.
If I may, I would personally be among the skeptics on this one. But I am surprised that other ones are more impacted by underlining than I had imagined. And I think the scope for you should be to do those cases that are definite, clear-cut, obvious. You can use your choice of words for that, because that's the kind of variance that we're supposed to take care of in the roots on LGR. And if they become very much subject to subjective approach, or if you can imagine a string panel being motivated to allow a specific label having that on the peel, then those things are not good handled mechanically in the LGR. And so that's kind of something to throw into your discussion. Also, of course, small letter G that you showed earlier could never, compared to Q, could never be a variant because of we cannot introduce variants between ASCII characters. It's a very simple rule. We cannot ever have a variant between ASCII characters.
Yes, agreed.
And the reason for that is ASCII items exist outside our scope, and we cannot introduce variants in the IDN.
Okay. Agreed. So let me show you one more other example where we, some of us were clear on including, others were on the fence, because it will create, and this example takes us to rows 78 through 80, the SS with Sevilla, comma, and dot below, basically all on the same set. Because underlying obscures, I mean, those in favor, the underlying obscures good enough so that makes create the confusion. Others were on the fence that overreaching, I mean, going from Sevilla comma, which looks possible, but transferring that relationship to the dot below as well, that seemed to be and beyond. And I think when you go ahead, please.
Yeah, so the Sevilla and comma have a relationship of their own. Because of their historical, they got historically disunified, and at the time, that's, I'm speaking of Unicode now, at the time Unicode discovered that there are many fonts, or were many fonts at the time, that substituted a comma for a Sevilla glyph, even in languages where Sevilla was the nominally required shift. So there's a good argument to make those two a set for that linguistic typographic reason. And you'll have to just reason to yourself to whether one can distinguish Sidia comma below from dot below in the present underline. But I think the worst relationship is between definitely the dot below and the letter S, because the dot below is a single pixel diacritic. Something to bear in mind when you do the analysis is, you know, block variant sound sounds difficult, but a quick look at various corpora should inform you whether a proposed relationship really cuts down the number of possible labels much, or whether it surprisingly has little impact. We found Ethiopic had lots of variants. We thought that was a large number. We ran the analysis, and while we sometimes had I think almost 10% of them were variants, and the number of labels that were variants were less than 1%. So that's the kind of analysis you can do to guard against making too large that you just run the analysis and see whether you reduce the number of possible labels with that thing. Yeah, 79 you have on the screen, that looks like the 5 is a correct score on that one. I mean, quote 179, not 979. 991.
Yeah, thank you, Gadi. Yeah, we'll take a look at those cases. I mean, we knew they were not clear-cut, so we'll look at those again. So I think that addresses the question on underlining. And again, these you did not find these in the earlier proposal because it's still working on that one. Okay, so let me go back to the document again. Yes, please. Peter. All right. So
it looks like item 4 that you have here on the screen right now is, in fact, what you're doing. You are working out the principle for the analysis of that, and I think that we're very happy to see that systematic approach you're using.
Correct, yes. So
and,
you will
and clearly
see that in the next proposal.
Yeah. And clearly that spreadsheet needs to become one of the attached documents.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay. All right, so moving on. Number 5 was an easy fix, so no comments there. All right, so on the comments on variants, I think the first one was variant set 1, alpha versus A. Let me see what the GP. Yeah, we got the gist of the comment, 251, because it's not part of the repertoire, should not be used to proxy the relationship with Greek alpha. I think the conclusion is going to be the same. We're just going to remove that reference. Is that the... the spirit of the comment? Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you're still using the... this and several different places, you have essentially created an argument that says, for the Latin script, it is a standard practice in typography to alternate certain shapes in font design. These alternate shapes are considered by the user as interchangeable, and an ordinary user would have no preconception of which of these shapes to expect in any given font. And the next step in your argument is to say, because users accept these shapes, even if in some orthographic traditions they are used in alternation, we have to treat both of or both or more, whatever, however many alternates a particular letter has. We have to treat all the common alternates in our variant analysis for that letter. That's effectively what you're saying. And I see that argument applied for the alpha. I see the argument applied for beta. I see the argument applied within the script for the F was hook. and it seems to be the same argument each time. So I'm wondering whether that is partially my personal suggestion to you in terms of structuring your document. I'm wondering whether there isn't a general principle that you're following that you can describe first to make then the selection of individually proposed ones easier to by just being able to reference a common principle. And if you can construct a common principle, then it may be easier to justify the whole set, because we will have to only discuss whether we can follow your analysis and understand and accept and agree with your principle, or whether we say, no, the principle really doesn't stand, and we have an easy way to deal with the whole set. But we would be guaranteed a consistency of all of them. What do you think of that thought?
I think we can do that. I think we can write a common principle that will encompass what we've done with the Latin A versus Greek alpha, with the sharp S and the B, with the F and the F with a hook. I think we can put words around that and use that as a general principle.
Okay. Right. Yeah, we'll work on that for the next proposal.
But there is an extra aspect to it, isn't there, which is whether certain relatively obscure forms, obscure glyphs, should be in the repertoire at all. I mean, one might think that about your bowl A, for example.
It's not in the repertoire.
It's not in the repertoire.
Correct. It's not in the repertoire, but it was used as a proxy to get to the Greek alpha.
I mean, there's quite a lot of discussion of it, and that's a potential confusion anyway. Excuse me. As long as, as it's outside the repertoire, then we don't need to worry about it.
All right. So the next item is variant set 10, the circle glyphs. We've done our analysis ourselves with a looking through the MSR and shortlisting all the circle glyphs as well as the vertical lines. So here we have a question about scope. Latin GP has done cross script analysis with related scripts such as Armenian, Greek, and Cyrillic. Do we need to expand that cross-script analysis to other scripts? One of our members suggested, Meika suggested, there are potential cases where Hebrew glyphs look like Latin ones, for example.
Here's the thing. What you need to do is, the principle, I would say the answer is yes, but the way you approach this is if you suspect something, you look at the other script, see whether you can construct a full label in the other script that really, on first glance, looks nicely like a Latin label. If you can find an example, then you can analyze it further. So for the circle glyph, we have Latin already delegated TLD.000, and it is easy to verify that there's a number of other scripts that can reproduce the look and feel of that .000 with their characters, and in a way that you cannot quickly get an intuition about that this might be a different script. There's nothing in the simple shape of a circle that lets you guess the script identity. And many other letters have an identifiable ductus. So if you put more of them together, the more you have, the more they look like, yeah, this is really strange looking. And the more you can identify possibly the script in something, and even if the label looks a bit like a Latin label, then it becomes a matter of judgment, and then it becomes out of scope. So we need to look for cases that are really patently obvious, ones that do not need judgment. They are, you know, almost black and white. That's what we're looking for. And yes, you should look at the repertoire of LGR3 when it comes out and verify. And, you know, Hebrew, you know it's on the way. You look at that too. And check off that there aren't any obvious cases.
Thank you. Noted.
I have a Bill.
Yeah, I don't know if Dennis can put it up easily, but we have in fact started doing exactly that with the vertical lines, both a long one and a short one, which is to say like a letter L versus a letter dotless I, and also the O, the circle, and also the crescent, the letter C or the open O, depending on which way the crescent opens. And we have we're working on some three-letter potential TLDs to look at each of those.
Right. So, for instance, it's good that you have it on screen. Yes, it's a perfect example, the one that you have in the ones you have in red on the ones you have in red on the top half of the screen, the vertical bar, you need to look at not only the ink of an individual glyph, but you need to see the spacing. So you see in CJK, you have the really obvious CJK full cell spacing, which makes a lot of characters ineligible for variants, because once you try to put them in the label, they just look so different. And the same you could say for the Arabic, because it is a very you have issues that the baseline and stuff is different. So I think you're correctly, I think red apparently means that you are not so sure they apply, and I would agree with you that those particular ones definitely are questionable. Looks like you're off to a good start, and you know, once LGR3 is out, you can look at the repertoire that's in there as well, and we would basically recommend you focus on cases that are really, really patently obvious. And here's a good example, for instance. In the second half of the screen, you have the circles. And you see the Malayalam and Myanmar to the right. And you see that they really nicely correspond in the font that you used. But even for circle in particular, even the Oriya and the Armenian are problematic, because the left hand of a URL may not be in Latin. And if it's in a different script, it will be really hard to tell that .000 is not the intended Latin. So that's because for the circle, it's really hard to gain any further understanding of what script it is. So we have tentatively come to prefer both Oriya and Armenian in the realm of things that that are mutually cross variants because they already are, of course, inside the index groups. But you will see that when you see LGR3 come out. But for instance, you have the Hebrew letter, for instance, and the bottom two examples of it would not be applicable. Are you saying the top line in Hebrew is from a certain font that shows it as a full circle?
Yes.
Okay.
The first that line is which font?
Arial. So yeah, in Arial font, that character shows a full circle.
Okay, that was the news to me. So it looks like you're discovering good information. I would say continue. So in this case. So when you have this case that one font is the outlier, then we need to discuss Arial, of course, is a little scary because that's a really, really, really widely used font. But we need to discuss, is that a font that is itself typical enough that we want to worry about it? But yes, that's interesting. But I would have expected you to have a little shading for this kind of case where it's less universal. It's still an issue is there, but it's less universal. So maybe some light peach or some other thing that gives you a set. Is the coloring in the script that indicates something? Or is that just
No, the coloring on top just to denote whether we have letters in each of the scripts. So for soft yellow, it's all the Latin letters and so on and so forth.
Okay, good. Yeah, so I would in terms of this idea that you had with the score for the underlining, it kind of applies here too. You may have maybe only three level, questionable, really questionable and good, and then that might be a good basis for discussing your finding when you complete.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. We have one comment from the room here. Meika?
Yes, hello, this is Meika. I just wanted to ask one question because I was not sure whether it became clear from the comments and responses. So, for clarification, the GP is not mandated to limit its cross-script analysis to closely related scripts. But potentially, all scripts part of MSR can be considered, and if there is a plausibility for cross-variant candidates, should be considered for the analysis. Is that correct? Thank you.
In principle, yes, but the further away the relationship is, the more in your face the visual overlap has to be.
Of course.
See what I'm trying to say? So, Armenian, we feel, especially the modern way of representing fonts, looks very much like a European, part of the European typographic tradition, and therefore, maybe some slight variation in letter shape, but can be treated as near homoglyph, but I wouldn't chase all the near homoglyphs with random scripts. I would go for the like the circle and stuff that is really obviously in your face and makes a nice obvious target. That's what I'm about.
At an early discussion, you asked us to look at the stroke and circle and crescent, which we have done now, or doing. Do you expect us to look at other shapes? and compare.
Yes. I would expect you to look at LGR3 when it comes out, or the same script in MSR if you want to do the analysis ahead of time. I don't care. In a sense of looking at it, and if you discover something that is really obvious that we missed, then I would expect you to consider it. We can't tell you to limit yourself to only those three, but we can tell you that we think those three are the most important ones, because they are the ones that, where the shapes show the least identifiable things about the script.
Okay.
But we may have overlooked something. So, you know, so, you have made yourself an expert in this analysis by doing your careful work, and I think it's appropriate for you to, you know, look at the other stuff, and if something really leaps to the eye, maybe follow up on it, but if nothing leaps to the eye, that's good too.
Okay. Thank you.
We're not interested in a large number of marginal cases. We don't want to miss a real obvious.
Okay.
Understood. Okay, so going back to the feedback document, 2.3, variant set 11, T and Greek row, it's basically on the same family as the A and alpha, so we'll make sure we have that principle written.
Right,
next
here,
one. Yes.
Yeah, so here is the one principle slightly different in the sense that, the shapes in question are not true alternate shapes, but they are, like for the row, but they are, smaller variations of shapes that you can find. And I want to point you out to the example we gave in our feedback. We found the font, the UI font at the top of our example. It's interesting because if you look carefully, while it does not have the left top left serif, the shape of the bowl for the row is just much more asymmetric than many other such shapes, and therefore the bottom right corner of the bowl looks much more like a P. This is just an FYI. I was intrigued to see see a design that was that P-like. But yes, you're going to continue using analyzing this so we can go to the next set. And oh, I should mention we mentioned letter win not because it's in the repertoire, but to give you an example of another shape that in other zones where it's available, people have used to spoof the letter P.
I would like to note one thing on this P and row question. The difference between, say, a Times New Roman font and a sans serif font, such as Arial, is something that the users routinely will discard. And the difference between a P and a sans serif font and a row is a tiny fraction of that level
right.
of difference that they're accustomed to ignoring. There may be a general principle there about how much difference anybody will ever notice. Thank you.
Yeah, so there's a bit. But especially with that rounded shape, there were a number of fonts that were popular a while back that had that shape in more decorative fonts. And I certainly read stuff that was done that way. Which one do you want to discuss next?
Thank you. Yes. So we'll skip 13. I think that's an easy fix on the XML. There's in section 2.5, item set 15, you and lookalikes, other than possible overreach, would you care to elaborate what do you mean of overreach?
No, not at the moment. We want to make sure we get to the rest of them, but just in general, whenever you create a large set, you may want to make sure that you're not pulling together too many things that you don't get, by transitivity, things brought together that shouldn't belong together. Just read it as a question mark on the set, so to verify and look at it. We should probably discuss the OE.
Yes, I want to get to that one. Please, go. Make a view. Go ahead, Asmus.
Yeah, let's. We may have somebody else on the IP might want to speak to that particular one.
If you're waiting for me, but I can't see what you're looking at, so unless you say what it is, I can't.
Okay, so if nobody else wants to say anything, it's the...
No, we, Asmus and I talked about it at length yesterday, so I think we know each other's opposition.
Okay.
Michelle, you want to speak to it a bit, or do you want me to do it?
Well, I mean, I can say something. I did some research yesterday. And for sure, the OE is used in some level quite a bit. It's being registered. So, but at the same time, it's pretty clear, at least in the French case, people see the OE ligature on the OE as separate letters, as a variant of each other. I saw, you know, example where they were using that for OE, you know, the organ of sight, and then we see OEUVRE, OEUVRE. Those are in fact basically, so it's pretty clear for me there's a variant relationship between the OE as a ligature and the OE as separate letters. And so it's a bit concerning to me that now you're basically introducing, obviously, a variant relationship between the AE ligature and then the OE as separate letters. And that's starting to go far, because before you know it, you're going to have a variant relationship between the OE letter and the AE letter. That would be very concerning. So it's a slope that I'm not sure I like to see, that, you know, we are getting a situation where we have too many variants between letters that are not really the same. At the end, you know, I'm almost like Asmus, I'm wondering if the OE as a ligature should be removed from the Latin and GM.
So to summarize, one cannot, so we have sequence AE, ligature AE, sequence OE, ligature OE. So the first thing that we have hard and fast rules, no variants among that ASCII characters. That means sequence AE, sequence OE, cannot become variants of each other by transitivity. So that is a hard and fast rule that you can just apply. And that leaves the problem individually between the sequence and the ligature, but doesn't address the issue between the two ligatures. And as Michelle hinted, we discussed that among ourselves, not in the full ID, but privately, and we're really wondering whether the ligature OE, if removed from the repertoire, would simplify the issue, because then you can have ligature AE and sequence AE, if you want, as a variant, because while they're not a variant in the Scandinavian language where the AE is used, they are seen as variants of each other. connection to letter sequence OE of the table in OE, which you would have to make a good strong argument why that's required for security. But that might be a possible way. We're not saying that's what you should do, but...
Yeah, opposite to that, we see that OE is already, you know, part of, you know, not OVCT at least, but it's for sure used in second level.
We have to recognize that, but second level is a little bit more permissive than the, and you have domains on the second level that are language specific.
And OE is also a very common, you know, feature of the French language.
So you may have some pushback if you decide to do that, but think about how you want to get yourself out of that corner.
And you know, again, I wrote that the AE on OE ligature confusability is not as strong as, let's say, between the A on the A ball. We did some font analysis as well, and it's pretty clear that even for font that use the A-ball, you know, the one that looks like an alpha, the AE ligature tend to be more different. I mean, they do in fact things quite a bit different. They try to differentiate more between the AE and the OE in those cases. I understand there's a lot of, I mean, there's some fantasy or some ornamental font where the AE and the OE looks quite a bit more similar. And I saw your examples on I understand that, but they're not as common as like the A on the A ball. But I mean, the whole thing, I think, between Asmus and I, we said that it's a slippery slope that would get you in a kind of water between the AE, the OE on the A plus E on the O plus E. That's kind of what we were getting to.
I think we don't have much time left.
Yeah, but here we have looked at the AE versus OE ligatures and found them very confusing, almost identical. But we have not seen the same between the AE ligature on one hand and AE versus OE ligature on the one hand versus OE. So, but you seem to argue that there's stronger reason to have a variant relationship between the ligature and the two separate letters. I don't really understand that.
Yeah, it's a matter of which language perspective you have in mind. In English, it's a very common spelling alternate between the two.
In French, too.
Right.
In French, too.
It's not that they are visually identical. It's just that they are, you know, interchangeable. Semantically. You know, it's like the, you know, Chinese simplified and, you know, traditional in some way.
So then in Swedish we have a umlaut, which can be translated or is transliterated to AE. So should we have a variant relationship there too?
You can go into all sorts of connections, but the simple fact is, with AE and OE, some languages treat them very much as optional ligatures, and some languages treat them very much as sequence and the compound are very distinct letters.
Yeah.
I mean, Danish is extreme. It's definitely all different letters, and in English and many other languages, an AE ligature is just, it's like an FI ligature. Something that you do for fancy Greek-based words, but you don't do it in you do high typography, but you don't do it all the time or consistently.
Yeah, on the another thing about the OE has a complicated story in French. I was forgot. I mean, it was not added in Latin one, by someone that made a big mistake. And because of that, and also, it was never really added in any French keyboard. So it's very difficult for French speakers or French, typewriters to enter the OE ligature. So people have got used to basically see the non-OE ligature as equivalent to the OE ligature because it's just a common way to enter it. It doesn't mean they look the same, but it's totally equivalent.
So, yeah, so I think you have more work to do on that one. We can't resolve it here for you. You've heard some additional concerns from people with different perspectives, and you may have to just look at it.
Yes, thank you.
Let me put it this way. At some point, you just have to make a self-consistent proposal and really write it all down with your reasoning for it, and then we will take it. And if we have to agree, if we have to disagree with your thing, we will tell you. And if not, then you can go ahead and put it to public comment, and the public will either agree or disagree. This is how the process works.
All right, noted. So it's 1 minute after the top of the hour. So thank you very much. We didn't go through the whole document, but we'll prepare a response and try to communicate that way and try to resolve all the remaining items on the list. With that, I appreciate connecting with us. And thank you.
Okay, thank you. As I said, don't be too shy. Just, at some point you just write your proposal, and that's how we resolve things. And thank you all.
Sorry, Osmos. Here some folks ask if whether we can extend the meeting. Of course, if you are available.
I could extend for about half an hour. I don't know about my colleagues.
Yeah, I could stay online for a bit.
Yep, so could I.
Yeah, I wanted at least to cover the 213 in that critics.
All right, thank you very much. So let's continue. So on the document we have, the next item is combining diacritics. So we understand what you're writing here, but then are you implying that, for example, a grave and an acute could be also confusable?
Well, basically, you always find the population that finds something confusable, but the interesting case that we mentioned here is Vietnamese, which has these accent combinations that don't show up anywhere else. And in those cases, I think it's appropriate to prioritize the question in the sense Vietnamese accented character makes a poor choice of trying to spoof a label in a different language. Right? It's always going to be an unusual cluster that would stick out as unfamiliar to other readers. And therefore, if two Vietnamese combinations look similar to each other, that's a problem. You could say that is a problem for the Vietnamese, and they should be used to it. So that becomes then maybe not an obvious case that we should mechanically address in the LGR, but maybe that's for the Vietnamese string similarity subgroup or whatever to resolve. However, if you have other diacritics that maybe like the Hungarian double acute that can look like an umlaut, fonts for certain languages that don't need to distinguish often use unusual shapes. So slightly decorative fonts, in, or in fact, two fonts in German may use Hochlauts that look more like a double acute. And then at that point, you're saying, yeah, you can possibly use the, it's the same thing, that you have readers that are familiar with alternate shapes. You substitute something from a different language that they're not expecting, and that's how you get to be confused. And certain cases might be obvious enough that you want to put a little break on it by making a block variance. And I think you have done that, and basically those of us who looked at it were coming back with saying that, in general, what you had listed seemed reasonable. I mean, as a kind of starting point.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the room? That one. Oh yeah. So on all. So moving on to in the document, other comments. Issues derived from scan of the XML. I think the only question here from us is to clarify what nominal and final form means in this context of the Latin.
It's something script. You don't have in Latin. It was used as an example for it's trying to describe how to create, how to make common. So, for instance, in Greek it would apply, right, if you wanted to make the final sigma and the sigma a variant. That's how you'd write the comments for it.
Got it. Yeah, that's what we, I think, we thought it was. Then we have the miscellaneous. I think that's very editorial, so not something here. So I want to ask in the room, have we missed anything? Do we have any other questions for integration panel? None? Okay, I think we're done here.
Yeah, very good. I want to add to, I am really impressed by the thoroughness that you have applied to your task. I mean, you have an unwieldy repertoire that is, so fractured in languages, different orthographic traditions and usage. It's not easy, so we appreciate the hard work you're doing. And I just wanted to add, in general, the way these discussions should be interpreted is obviously a lot of things, even what we said today, can't be considered as an IP consensus because, mostly I spoke. I know some of what we've written down, what we discussed, but we have not checked every single thing as a whole committee. And so it's feedback was not a consensus position necessarily. That is one limitation. The other limitation is that the IP never gives feedback of the type of we approve of something or something else because we always only give you the reverse. If we at the moment cannot see a problem, we may tell you so. And then when the final proposal comes, we give it a final review and think about it at that time, and then we will reach our accept or reject. But we will not give you, quote, pre-approval of anything. We can give you things that we are concerned about. We can give you ideas of how we think about things, but we will not formally give you pre-approval. So I want to make it really clear that nothing that we said today can be understood as something that you can say, oh, they mentioned this, so we did precisely this, so they will have to approve it. It's not how it works. We will tell you, things in general terms, but we reserve our final review to the end. Just want to be really clear about it so that if we do run into some issue that after some reflection in your very final proposal, we come to a different conclusion than we did today so that you're not surprised. It is a possibility. But I hope we've been fair enough to tell you where we already see issues and what they would be, and so that you have good guidance to move forward with your work.
Thank you, Rasmus. Noted. With that, so we'll, like you say, we're going to take that as guidance. We're not going to be shy and come again with the next iteration of the proposal and try to send that as well when it's done.
Right, perfect.
With that, again, appreciate your time and thank you for having this conversation with us.
Yeah, appreciate you making time for talking to us.
Thank you. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.